Hello, everyone, and welcome to Note to Scene, a music news podcast covering everything from pop punk to metalcore. I'm Matt Crane.
I'm Tyler Sharp.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen, where every week we discuss all the biggest news stories in the music scene. Find more episodes of this show on Apple Podcasts, where you should please rate and review us. Email us at notetoscene@gmail.com. So much to talk about this week. Big news from Blink-182 and State Champs. But first, we're going to talk about Neon King's Mayday Parade, who are back in 2018 with a new album, single, and record label. All right, let's go. Now, I think, like, Aaron has a point here when he says, you know, we are people too. We read, we hurt, we also spent more time on Erase Me than any other record we ever made. Like, he has a point. Like, as a human, you know, not just a musician, he can be upset by criticism. And I think he's allowed to feel that way. But I also think this band kind of, you need to expect a certain amount of criticism when you're making this big of a shift with your band. And I think Under Oath particularly have been insulated from this type of criticism most of their career.
Absolutely. These dudes were the cred band, you know, like these dudes always went against the grain and put out the most remarkable music that, you know, it's in the top tier of our scene for sure.
Yeah.
This band always rose to the top, and we were able to rely on them to not abide by norms or like the tropes of emo and the scene world.
And sorry, what we're talking about here is Aaron Gillespie called out, well, he called out a fan who basically accused Under Oath of selling out. And, you know, he sort of put up a sympathetic tweet about it. And basically, like, every musician in the scene backed him up and said that the record's great and the fans need to, like, chill the fuck out.
I get it. You know, we did our episode. We weren't you can go back and listen to it, but we weren't 100% pleased with it. It's not the Under Oath album that either of us wanted necessarily. Yeah. But, you know, artists have, they're the ones providing the content for us to either enjoy or dismiss. I think that the artists just ultimately have to deal with what the fans are going to say. We're never going to live in a world where everything is just always awesome 100% of the time. So
right,
when you put your art out there into the world, you it's there. You have to understand that it's there for people to critique it.
Especially when you're making this big of a change.
Right.
You know, this
exactly.
is a huge change for them. And Under Oath fans like tend to just worship this band. They haven't dealt with a lot of criticism with each move they've made. Like, I feel like your typical Under Oath diehard, when the band did make a stylistic shift, was more likely to just kind of like chill out and ignore the band for a while rather than go at them. You know what I mean? Like, well, there are plenty of Dallas heads out there that just were like, you know, this isn't for me anymore. I'm going to go listen to fucking Zayo or something, you know?
Right.
They have never been under siege from their fan base, so to speak, in the way they are now.
Right.
And it's just, you know, it was a big change.
I mean, back then there was backlash from Dallas to Spencer, but the band was so small during the
yeah.
changing of time cycle that it was nowhere
yeah.
near where they're at now. And when they changed from Disambiguation to Lost in the Sound, we saw the sales cut. Nobody complained
right.
about Lost in the Sound of Separation. They just,
no,
fans became indifferent,
did.
You know?
Dude, and people didn't even really complain about Disambiguation.
Not at
the
all.
The sales just cut. It's like this
right.
band, they've been immune to that level of criticism. But we gotta get going, Tyler, unless you have anything else to add on this subject. It was just interesting. You know, I got to say one thing. A bunch of band members came to Aaron's defense, and that's cool. But did you see Telly from The Word Alive come to Aaron's defense?
Yeah,
Telly
was about to be
oh,
in those replies,
God.
Man. You know he was
dude,
about to be there.
It was just like he made it all about himself. You know
that's
what I mean?
That's what he does, dude. That's what he does.
And Telly's ultimate quote was like, you know, Under Oath and bands like them aren't ruining music. You, the fan, are ruining rock music. He, like, put the blame on the fall of rock we're seeing on the fan, not on bands like The Word Alive for making shitty music. Sorry, Telly. You know,
right.
bands like yours are the reason this scene is falling apart. It's not the fans' fault.
Absolutely.
Give them good music.
Yeah, right? No. Oh, my God. Don't even get me started on that Word Alive album, man.
The whole podcast, man.
2400 first week. Like, have fun opening up for fucking, like, Moss the Flames, man. Sit down.
Anything else, Tyler, on this?
I don't think so. I am under oath my band, and I'll always stand by them, but that doesn't mean I'm going to love every single move that they do. All right.
Well, before we get going, I got to bring this up. You sent me a text the other day.
Oh, God.
It kind of pretty much ruined my day.
Oh, no.
And, this is Tyler Sharp being totally serious, audience. The text was somewhere along the lines of, on this day 10 years ago, Avril Lavigne's Girlfriend became the number one single on the Billboard charts. And I was like, fuck.
Dude, and I just started it back, man.
Dude, because that song was so huge. And like, I started thinking about high school and that album, The Best Damn Thing. And during like Neon and, you know, late emo, like that was sort of the ultimate guilty pleasure album, wasn't it? That Avril album.
Absolutely. Like that, the Girlfriend music video was the first one to like break some YouTube record or something like that. Really? I think it was like the highest streamed music video like for the longest time.
You know, the old days,
right. Until like Bieber and Katy Perry came along. But that record was like a phenomenon, man. Like they totally... It's a fantastic, from a PR standpoint, it's one of the best pivots in all of like pop music.
They captured the essence of what was going on in neon pop punk while remaining a pop artist that could dominate in top 40 market, which is just...
And just the way, you know, like we have those first two Avril records, which are very... Those two records existed in a time where it was still considered taboo if you didn't have like a band backing you. It was still cred if you had like guitars and you had musicians actually performing the music. And she pivoted and she kept some guitars, but dude, that's a pop record in and of itself. Okay, man,
I don't want to spend too much time on this, we really got it going, but like I gotta say, do we need to do an Avril episode? Is an Avril Lavigne bonus episode like something we need to do?
I think it's 100% necessary with the comeback this year, man.
The comeback, it's happening.
It's coming.
We'll put it to the listeners. Listeners, if you want an Avril Lavigne bonus episode, we can make that happen. Email notescene@gmail.com and let us know if you want it. If you are strongly opposed to it, email notescene@gmail.com as well. All right, Tyler. Let's move on and let's do a listener question. This one comes in from listener Jordan K, who writes into notescene@gmail.com. Jordan says, "Hey, Tyler and Matt, do you think Avenged Sevenfold should have put the band to rest when the Rev passed away? Or do you think it's a good thing they're continuing on his memory? Being the only girl in my family to listen to this type of music, it's hard to really get an opinion. Thanks, guys, and I enjoy the show. I listen every day when I go to work and during work." Thanks, Jordan. We appreciate that. This is an interesting question. See,
I don't think we've ever talked about Avenged on the show before.
No, we haven't. But there's, you know, there's a legacy there, and there's a big scene.
Oh,
connection.
No, absolutely.
Like, I was one of those psychopaths who, like, Waking the Fallen was my fucking album. Like, I played it for an entire summer. I just nerded out to that band and that album and that whole time period. And you know, the Rev's drumming was a big part of it. But like, this is super embarrassing. But like, in the morning before, I think it was like eighth grade, every morning before school, I used to watch the Unholy Confessions video to get pumped up for every morning. I did it for like a year straight.
Yes.
I would just watch that video and I would just watch the guitar flips and I'd watch the Rev flip his drumsticks, you know, major. I was like, and I was just like, it was so cool. But, you know, at the point, in all respect to the Rev, like the dude is seriously a great drummer. And just like, go listen to City of Evil or listen to, you know, Waking the Fallen, and you can hear it there. He's an amazing drummer. But at the point when he died, the band were, you know, they had already put out self-titled, which was a big pivot into just straight up radio rock, like straight up. And like his presence like wasn't as felt anymore. And the band's audience, I don't really think, knew as much about him as that old audience that, you know, were about those early Avenged records. And at that point, the band were just a business. So I think, you know, continuing on was absolutely the right move, you know, for better or worse. I mean, since he's been gone, I think the music has gotten progressively worse, worse and worse. That first album without him, what was it called? Hail of the King?
I think so. Yeah.
It's just awful. And it's only gotten worse since then. And it's not, maybe it's not because of him. It's just because of M. Shadow's vision. It's like, let's get more generic. What do you think, T-Sharp?
Yeah, man, I'm glad you led with this one, because this has never, ever been my band. Like, to put Avenged Sevenfold...
Dude, shouts to my mom for not letting me get an A7X tattoo on my leg when I was 16. Because
no.
It could have happened, okay? I'm so thankful it didn't.
I know you were in the trenches for this band, so I'm glad we have your perspective
when you're,
on it.
13, they were the coolest motherfuckers you had ever seen.
They were a little bit before my time. You know, yeah. By the time I dove headfirst in the scene, it was about 2008. And I do remember seeing a lot of Avenged Sevenfold music videos on Fuse and MTV2 and, like, the VH1 countdowns.
Yeah, because, but, you know, City of Evil just... that was their blow-up record.
Right.
Backcountry? You gotta like Backcountry.
Dude,
that song, that's the single. Like,
His voice is so nasally. I cannot get over it. I've never enjoyed this band. To put it in perspective, the only Avenged Sevenfold song I liked up until like maybe 2 years ago was Dear God.
Yeah, turn your mic off. You don't like Wicked the Thong?
Turn your mic off, he says. No, you know, I'm just not a fan.
Just leave it there.
Just not a fan. This is not my band at all.
Yeah. From a band perspective, you know, you work with bands and,
I mean,
what do you think? You think they made the right choice?
Sure. I don't think they should have ended it.
To me, it just seems obvious. And I mean, not even on the level of... I don't want to disrespect the Rev, but, you know, bands as from Led Zeppelin to, you know, to Guns N' Roses have lost drummers and been fine. You know, it's
right.
The drummer is not going to end your band, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough spot. But, I mean, we've seen so many bands, like you said. I mean, just Hawthorne Heights, you know. Bands continue on when
right.
members pass, and for better or for worse. And Avenged Sevenfold have managed to continue their career at a, we'll say, slightly declining commercial relevance. But
with the last record and that whole botched release. But they're still, you know.
They're still Avenged Sevenfold.
Yeah.
Exactly. So... I'm glad that this band didn't break up, because they have a massive fan base, and again, for better or for worse, they're still there for you.
Yeah, and that fan base is still there for bands like A Day to Remember to poach off of and try to siphon up fans. But we got to hit our main story, Tyler Sharp. It's time. Mayday Parade announced their sixth album, Sunnyland, out this June on Rise Records. To lead things off, the band dropped their new single, Piece of Your Heart. Tyler Sharp, have you had a chance to hear Piece of Your Heart yet? Our first taste of the new Mayday.
No, oh, I really wish I haven't. I really wish I have not heard this song. So right off the bat, literally the first 10 seconds of the song, that intro lead riff rips hard from a band called Need to Breathe's song called Signature of Divine. They released that in like 2007 or 2008. I don't know if Mayday even knows that band exists, but if you listen to those two songs side by side, it's
a hard rip.
Nearly note for note.
It's a hard rip.
Nearly note for note. The song goes on. They got those shitty like whoa-oh harmonies that Need to Breathe also love to do. But also bands such as the fucking like Lumineers and just like shitty indie alt radio bands. At best, like this is a song that got cut from anywhere but here, their second album. At best, Mayday Parade just aren't anything if they don't have this like their youthful vigor that first record, A Lesson in Romantics, has. And this song is completely void of it. It's even worse than their last record. And that record just, wow. Let's not even go into that at this point. But I am at a 4.5 out of 10 on this, Matt.
Holy
I will
shit.
Never revisit this song. Mayday Parade are canceled.
Okay, so I'm on a different side of you here. To me, the song, it's fine. Like, it's a competent song. I don't hate it. You know, it feels sort of like there's a shot at alt radio here, possibly.
What?
And that's why we're seeing, you know, like a re-engineering of what the bands are doing. The whoa-ohs, which, you know, is always a roll of a dice if you're going to have the whoa-ohs in your song, they work for me. Speaking of ripoffs, you know, you mentioned that intro ripoff. These whoa-ohs, if you play them right next to each other, next to Some Nights by Fun, same damn whoa-oh.
No.
Like, it's that same hipster thump. So, you know, the band are just kind of taking pieces from other bands and assembling, you know, something to channel Derek's voice through, which at this point I'm fine, man, because this band's out of ideas. like, you know what I mean? Like, whatever. You know, if it, like that band you brought up, you know, nobody really remembers them. And if a tree falls in the forest, you know, kind of deal, I'm fine with them taking what they need to get the music out. This song's fine. Like, I did hit that check mark on Spotify.
No, I'm at about, you did not. Yeah. Oh, I am my at, God.
I am at about a 7 out of 10 on this one. It's pretty baseline Mayday, but just sort of given that extra hipster thump to kick it up to some alt radio potential. Does Derek have a girlfriend?
I'm about to walk off this show, man.
Does Derek have a girlfriend?
I don't know, dude. He's got a fucking mustache right now.
Dude, here's my thing. Because, like, you know, the song's all about, like, he's only got a piece of this girl's heart, but he wants the whole thing. And it's like, dude, man, like, have you, you know, experienced the love of a woman yet? Like, he's still writing these songs. Like, yo, man, like, I know some girls. Like, I have friends, dude. Like, hit the DMs. I can play matchmaker. Like,
oh, my,
you know,
God.
Still making
I know.
All that said, I don't really see this, you know, the song taking the band any further with it. You know, the only real potential I found here was the song catching it all. If, you know, BMG decides to give it a little shove. That's kind of where I am. It's mediocre. It's mediocre, decent, it works. I don't know. I'm not excited about it. I don't hate it. Like I said, it's fine.
Oh, man. This is a bad song. This is a really bad song, Matt. And I think you put too much weight in artists' lyrics. I think deep down, Derek has just been writing the same song for the last 10 years.
If you look closely enough, every single song has been the exact same.
He's probably fucking married, man. Like,
these are all Jamie all over. It's just the same. This band has only written one song. So Mayday Parade, right? You know? They can be, just looking at their legacy is interesting. Because to me, like, they're really schlocky and gushy and, like, very melodramatic. Like, of all the pop-punk bands, they're kind of, in a good way, some would say, they're very cringeworthy. You know what I mean? It's very oozy. Just, like, oozing out the romance to the point of, like, ugh, you know, sometimes.
Uh-huh.
It brings a lot of nostalgia back, though, when you think about them. Because 2007, 2008... the Neon Invasion happened, and, you know, Mayday were at one point the biggest band of that scene. Everybody's MySpace profile was their name, and then in brackets, Mayday Parade. Like, I saw it happen. You know, mm-hmm. This band, they were everywhere. And obviously that was the big part. You know, Romantics came out in 2007 on Fearless, and you love that record, Tyler.
I think that's a scene classic. Straight up, I'm pretty sure that record's a scene classic. Just the dichotomy between Derek and Jason. There was never another Neon band that had that grit that Jason provided to the songs. And from what I understand, he left the band before this album even came out. I don't think people remember that or realize how short Jason's stint in the band is. Or was, but yeah. How long his legacy has lasted through it, because the band has never topped that record.
Right.
So it's funny to look back and see how things shook out. But yeah, I mean, there was a time where MTV2 was playing Jamie All Over every time I turned on the TV. Like, that music video was just in constant rotation. And it's a fantastic song. It just fit the era so well.
And I looked away. Because, you know, I was all about From First to Last and MCR, all these dark bands. I was all about the dark, you know, post-hardcore movement. And these neon bands really pissed me off. And Mayday Parade, I was just, they were everywhere. And I was like, why are all your promo pics sunny? Why do you all look so happy? You know, it just drove me nuts. And I really ignored the band. But so in 2009, though, they came back with Anywhere But Here, which that was their first major label record that came out on Atlantic, right?
Mm-hmm. People don't remember that either.
Yeah. But that's a decent record.
In hindsight, it is. When it was released, the backlash was real. Missed Jason, man. Like, everyone's like, where the hell is Jason?
So was it one of those instantly noticeable things?
Oh, absolutely. You still hear it in Mayday's music. It's like, where's Jason? Derek's voice is iconic of the Neon era. When you hear it, you're like, oh, it's a Mayday song. Okay, where's Jason? He doesn't come in.
It's funny because, like, Go Radio just never got going, really. Man, as far as hype goes, and you know, they never really made an impact, you
which
know
is a
I mean
bummer,
they weren't, it's not like they, it was like the color Fred or anything from Taking Back Sunday, but like they were a band, but like, you know, they never got any bigger than like the Dangerous Summer.
Yeah, he tried to go, Jason took that a little bit too, I don't want to say cred route, but he was a little bit too experimental in their direction, and you can tell just from those two albums. I loved Go Radio. I was a big fan. That second album still got bangers.
Good songs. Yeah. I remember at AP having to cover the Jason Lancaster solo album, like after Go Radio.
Oh, shit.
And just nobody caring. And
I
nobody
didn't even
reading
know that happened.
Yeah. And I was just like, you guys realize this guy's not, he's not as big as you think he is anymore. Like he had his moment, you know, in 07, 08, but it just wasn't there.
Wasn't there one song where he and Derek did together post Mayday? I'm pretty sure you premiered it at All Press.
That's how little I gave a shit. But, you know, as somebody who, like, revisited Anywhere But Here, you know, at the time I totally rejected it. I really like the title track. And I actually like the song, I Swear This Time. You know, there's, like, an earnestness to those songs that I find charming. I actually really do like it. I think it's a total failure of an album. But
no.
In 2011... another made complicated major label album they put out, self titled. What was that like when that hit? I mean, was there backlash? People just not care anymore? Because we got to mention, as this goes on, the band's sales are only going up and up and up somehow.
Somehow. It's one of the major scene mysteries.
Anywhere But Here did about 15,000 copies first week. Self-titled did, I think, about 28,000 copies first week. But, like, what was their reaction like when that record dropped?
So, right before that album, they put out the Valdosta EP. And it had reworkings of songs from the first full-length and the second full-length. And at the very end, it had a song called Terrible Things. And that remains one of the fan favorites to this day of Mayday Parade's back catalog. And I felt like that song, for whatever reason, it just clicked. And it opened the door for Mayday to have the opportunity to have a comeback on their third record. When this album dropped, the self-titled one, they led with Oh Well, Oh Well. And right when that dropped, people were like, hell yes. This feels like a Lesson in Romantics Mayday. Without Jason, they managed to pull off that sound again.
So that kind of answers a question for me, like a mystery I've long tried to figure out about this band. They captured some hype there, it sounds like, which would explain why. In 2013, we were all a little taken aback at AP. Monsters in a Closet dropped, and the band had their biggest first week sales ever, 30,000 copies. They were selling out tours. They were like headlining Warped. They felt bigger than they had ever been in 2013. And it was crazy because ultimately that record seems like it didn't matter, you know. But when it came out, it sold really well. The band were fucking killing it. And then Black Lines came out in 2015.
I just feel like the success of Monsters in the Closet was really from the good graces of self-titled.
That makes sense. I mean, that totally explains it. And then, you know, ultimately there's nothing memorable really from Monsters in the Closet. And and Black Lines comes out, the dark Mayday album.
Yeah.
And it totally flops. It sold 15,000 copies first week. Half of what the last record sold. I mean, what were you thinking when that record came out, T-Sharp?
I was way over Mayday, man, at that point. I remember I was at Riot Fest that summer of 2015, right after the album had dropped. And I remember walking by their set, and they were playing, it was either Keep in Mind, that first single, or the one where Dan from Real Friends is on. And I just looked at them, and I just kept walking. I was just like, it's over. Like, I'm going to go watch literally any other band at this point.
So that's kind of where we come to now is Black Lines was such a flop. Does the band have a chance here to rebound? Do they, can they matter? Can they be relevant? Do you see them having any chance here, Tyler Sharp, surviving?
Not.
They just feel like they're of a different era. It's a tough thing.
I mean, they are going to survive in their bubble, you know, like they're not going to break up after this album. I mean, who knows? Who knows what happens? But commercially, they are sustainable for probably like 2 more cycles. At that point, you know, they're probably going to be down to like fucking 3K first week. But dude, I'm just saying, we've seen some numbers lately.
I know, man.
It is not well here.
We have seen some drive-by shootings for album sales for sure. But
okay,
so ultimately, it's pretty early, but I think we have a good guess here. Where do you see the band coming in first week sales for this record? The last one did 15, which was a big drop. Where do you see this new record coming in?
Oh my goodness. I'm going to say 8,500.
Okay. I'm going with 12K.
12. Wow. That'll be success for me.
Yeah. I think the fan base is going to stick with them through this. And, you know, they're going to lose a little bit, but not too much. Anything else you want to add on Mayday, Tyler Sharp?
Rest in peace, Mayday. It was fun.
Yo, Tyler does not like your new song, Dave. No. All right. Let's move on to our next story, which is Blink-182. So Mark Hoppus says that the new Blink-182 songs sound like, and I'm quoting, they pick up or take off your pants and jacket left off. Siren emojis, Tyler Sharp, everywhere. You know, there were like 2 huge takeaways from this quote from Mark. First, we have further confirmation that this Blink album is actually being recorded and everything seems to be in motion, you know, which is crazy because like my man Travis Barker's out there like in everything right now, playing in the Fever, you know, making records with rappers, like that he even has time to do it is just right. That guy's a machine. Point 2 is, to me, this feels like take off your pants and jacket kind of feels like an appropriate direction for the band at this stage in their career. Like if I were to compare California to one previous Blink album, like which one it matches up to the most, it would be Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, because that's kind of it's the fun record.
I would almost go more towards self-titled. I mean, I don't know,
it's self-titled tough. was way more emo.
Yeah, but it had
experimental.
Yeah, but California had its emo tracks, you know.
True,
like San Diego.
I feel like California was like a Take Off Your Pants and Jacket pop punk album, but just with a somber tone.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I'm just, I'm over it. Like, show me the music. Show me the music. Unless you ain't got music to give to me, just shut the fuck up. Get like, come on. Give me something I can latch onto. I am so sick of the rumor mill from anyone and anything associated with the Blink camp. And I'm looking directly at Tom, but now that Mark is hopping in on the hype train, which, dude, we've seen this so much throughout the past four fucking years of numerous bands. We're going to sound like our old shit. Okay,
they're fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. Blink's making new music. We knew this was going to happen, though.
The we would sound like our old shit thing, it is cliche, but I just think in this case, Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, it just kind of makes sense when dealing with it in the same sonic space as California. You know, California being a fun album that was totally somber, you could see them making an album like California, but maybe let's turn up the happy. Let's make a happy summer album. You know, more songs like She's Out of Her Mind and stuff like that. It's just something I could realistically see the band doing. I don't know what you're complaining about Blink for. The normal Blink treatment is we get fucking 8 years of nothing, man. Like, this is great. They're already making new music. Like, you know, it seems like since they've cut Tom out of the band, they might become a stable thing again, where it's only been 2 years, and here they come.
Every band member talks. Just do it, man. Like, just show me the music.
They're doing it. It's not ready yet, Tyler. We're still, you know, we're not that far off cycle.
I'm so over the nostalgia hype train. I'm over it.
Man, I don't even know what to say to you. This is great news, and you are just, you're bringing me down, man.
I'm over it, dude. I'm you're, sick of these band bros talking out of their ass.
But you don't you dare call Mark Hoppus a band. Okay? That's your band dad.
I'm here to get a rise out of you, Matt. It's
that
working.
Is your band dad.
That anyway, is your band dad.
I am stoked that Blink are making new music. Right, this is one of my favorite bands of all time. And I'm really interested to see where they can go. I like, you know, that Mark is saying here. I take this as a signal. This is going to be a fun record. We're gonna do away with some of the somberness. And shit, maybe we'll get some more states. And maybe we'll get some more rock shows. As immature as those songs are, I'll take it, dude.
I mean, let's do it. Let's bring out the bangers. But until then, I'm done then with these hype up. Train narratives, man. It's just, it's so overdone. And you know, and bands, not enough bands have delivered on these hype train narratives to warrant more bands doing it. You know, like when's the last band who said we're gonna sound like our old shit sounded like their old shit?
I mean, Blink kind of did. <You're right. laughs> I mean, this is the one band you got to give that pass to.
They were never my band, so I'm able to be a little bit more aggressive towards them, I guess.
they brought back from neighborhoods. They didn't go back. All right, let's move on. Our next story, State Champs released Crystal Ball, the second single from their upcoming third album, Living Proof. This follows the mediocre lead single, Dead and Gone, that we talked about a couple weeks ago. Tyler Sharp, what do you think of Crystal Ball?
This is another middle-of-the-road State Champ song. It is pretty unremarkable. I couldn't remember how it sounded the first time I listened to it. Yeah. After I was done. It's still not over 100,000 YouTube views. Over a week after its release, it's only at 188,000 on Spotify. Like, where's the hype, man? This stuff should be shooting to 500,000, like, no problem. At least 300,000. I don't see it. I don't see the hype because the material isn't there. Like, congrats, State Champs fans. You got another State Champ song. That's about all this is.
Where are you at? What's your score?
I'm at a 5 out of 10.
Ooh, so you think this is worse than Dead and Gone?
Oh, yeah, just because of the monotony of it. It's like, holy shit, I've heard this song 20 times on the past two State Champs
I think
records.
You're just mad. I think you're just
I'm
mad.
I'm very pissed, man.
Okay, all right, so to me, this was, okay, so this is like way less of a 5 seconds of summer rip than the last song was to me. And this feels at least a little more like old State Champs to me.
That's the point.
The engine. true. But like, I was pretty put off by the Five Sauce thing last week. So the intro in the first verse of this song, I don't know if you got the same effect, but it had me like really fucking worried. Like, the production value was questionable, man. Like, that first verse, it's kind of like, what's going on? But that chorus has like way more of a kick and a melodic drive to it than the last single. It's more of a traditionalist pop punk, very breezy, good for summer kind of song. I got to point out the good. I like it when Derek hits the higher part of his vocal range in the second part of the chorus. I think like Derek's kind of their secret weapon, his vocal range. And it's used sparsely when he goes into those higher ranges. And I think that makes it more special when it does happen. But overall, I am at a 6.8 out of 10. I like it better slightly than the last one, which I think I give a 6.5 out of 10. But, you know, it still comes back to like, is this band good at music? You know, like, do they make good music? And it's like you said, it's right there in the middle. Like, this song didn't hit that check mark on Spotify. I'm not gonna revisit this one. You know, this just isn't seeming like enough for this band to take the next step in their career.
What was Feldman doing? Like, what did he do in the studio? We got that Feldman kind of esque vibe on the first single, even though that obviously didn't work. But this literally just sounds like a B-side from either of the last two State Champs records. I've heard this song before.
Yeah.
There's nothing, absolutely nothing new here. And when you're trying to progress...
It sounds a little janky, too. Like, janky. Yeah. Like, put together in a weird, weird way. But, like, I think the chorus is solid.
I've heard it before. They're just rehashing old material at this point. And this song isn't going to take them anywhere. There's no way that this band moves to where they need to be with record at this point.
I think they're just not good at music, man. Like, I think that's just the truth of it. We've had to go through, you know, we're going to go through 3 records and find out they were never that good.
It's a shame because I truly think that this band had potential.
Yeah.
After the Finer Things, I was like, wow, okay, this is going to be a pop punk contender. And I was pretty disappointed with Around the World and Back. And now we're here and it's just, you can tell, it's over.
All right, let's move on to our pop story this week, which is Selena Gomez. Selena Gomez released her new single, Back to You. This is the first single since Wolves, her hit with EDM DJ Marshmello. Tyler Sharp, have you had a chance to listen to Back to You? And what do you think of it?
I have. And how many Selena stumbles are we going to go through in her career, man? The I Want to Hold You When I'm Not Supposed To melody, that is supposed to kind of be, that was the angle where they started teasing the song, and that was kind of like the hook lyric. It misses so hard. And is it just me, or is there like low-key country EDM wave vibes in this song?
It's not just you.
Like, it's there, man. And I don't have anything against country EDM, but this isn't what she needed, man. Where the hell's the album? She doesn't need a song for 13 Reasons Why. Like, after Wolves, it is time, man. When you heard Wolves, you knew that it was Banger Nation. Like, that, you knew. It just fit the current atmosphere so well. This song tries to piggyback off the current EDM pop wave, but I don't think it's a good enough song. Like, the melody doesn't cook right. There's something that doesn't click there. And ultimately, I'm at a 6 out of 10, and I'm pretty disappointed. And it's not getting the streams it needs to right out of the gates. It doesn't have good placement on the big Spotify playlist, and I don't understand why do this now.
I think you are very, 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 very wrong on this one, Tyler Sharp.
No.
Dude, this song, first off, banger. Let's just get that out of the way. And I'm going to go through what I think here. So when I first heard that intro, the acoustic guitar, I was like, yo, dude, are we going Michelle Branch here for a sec? And I was like pretty stoked for a minute. I was like, let's go. Let's go.
No.
Like, early 2000s, like sad pop rock. I was about it. But then ultimately, you're right. It does. I mean, it turns into, you know, an EDM Avicii rip, essentially, that, you know, that mix of you know, strings and the EDM beats. And I actually thought, it felt pretty timely given the, the recent passing of Avicii. And I don't know if that made the song resonate more with me, but it was good hearing that. And it's got, you know, the typical Avicii pre-drop chorus chant, which I thought was great. And vocally, she just sounds so good on this song. It's pretty standard, you know, EDM core pop banger, but to me, it's her voice here that really makes the song like stand out from the pack. It's just, it's so good. I don't know if this is going to turn into the loop of her next album or not. I think, you know, they're going to gauge how it goes, but it's actually seems to be doing really well so far. I got a lot of radio ads. I mean, it was at number 42 on radio, like a couple days after being dropped. It's attached to the Netflix series 13 Reasons Why, but I think that's more of a marketing thing. Like this song isn't really about that show. This is just another song about Justin and her going back to Justin.
Right, for sure. But and all right, keep going.
I think it's a really good song. I'm at an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
I'm pulling up the Song of the Summer tracker.
No.
For those of you who don't know, Tyler and I have the Song of the Summer tracker, and this is where we throw our songs that we think could be potential songs of the summer. And I think what do we have in there so far? We have Post Malone's
Better Now.
Better Now. Cardi B's
I like it.
And I am throwing Selena Gomez Back to You. I think it's in the perfect position that it could end up being one of the early songs of the summer. There's potential there. I really like this one.
Dude, it performed terribly right out of the gate compared to, say, like Ariana's No Tears Left to Cry.
Yeah.
This song stumbled so hard. Like, if you look at, I'm looking through the Global Top 50 chart on Spotify, and I don't see it on here.
Interesting.
I'm missing it, I don't see it.
I mean,
on
it
here.
Just come out, and you know, it's.
Oh no!
We'll
okay.
See.
So it's sitting at 22 right now on the Global Top 50 chart.
And I mean, it got a lot of radio ads, and it's gonna happen. It's a Selena song. Like, I think
no,
either
not.
Way, Dude, either what, no matter what, it's going to be in the top 20. I guarantee you that at radio. And it's going to get played. It's going to bump. But it's a question of whether or not it's going to be a hit. And I think it is. I think she's going to, they're setting her up for another It Ain't Me. It's kind of what she did the other summer with that song.
I am so against you. You really think that I Want to Hold You When I'm Not Supposed To melody's good?
I love it, man. Or the, what's the line she
it
has?
It doesn't flow my heart, right.
Something about my heart breaks in two, but when it comes back together, it still beats for you. Like, same. Hashtag relatable.
Oh,
man,
my
dude.
God.
So good.
Get that shit.
It's great. And vocally, he's on point. Dude, this song. Dude, she says just as cheesy of shit and wolves, and you're fine with it because it's Marshmello. Come on, man.
No, dude, get out of here. Dude. Obviously, Marshmello adds to the track, but that's a banger. Like, the melody just cooks in there. It's cracked here. There's a crack in the Selena armor here.
Selena Gomez is continuing the streak. We started with It Ain't Me.
No.
We went to Wolves. Well, actually, we did It Ain't Me, and then we went to that other fucking really
Back
good song.
To, yeah. No, Fetish.
Fetish, yeah. I love that dark pop one. And then we went to It Ain't, Wolves, and now we are here. And
It's not gonna cook, man. There's no
I think it's gonna, man.
Way. This is gonna right. take it like all summer just to get to 100 million plays on Spotify. You know, Wolves is already at 463 million. It Ain't Me's got 708 million.
I think this one's going, man.
No,
the banger.
No,
eight out of ten.
I am banger. I have drawn my line in the sand. We are gonna come back to
Selena
this.
Gomez.
We are gonna come back to this.
Well, this is the thing with the Song of the Summer tracker. What Tyler and I do is at the end of the summer, we go and we unbiasedly look at what was the Song of the Summer, and then we look what we've thrown in our tracker and see if any of us hit the mark. So, you know, I've thrown one in there. We'll see what happens. We will continue with Song of the Summer tracker, and because that's always fun to figure out what was the Song of the Summer. Anything else, Tyler, you want to add on Selena Gomez?
It's a miss.
Banger Nation.
Get out of here. No, Banger that Nation. Is there are no sirens for this song.
Banger
Absolutely
Nation.
Not.
All right, I'm going to let you have the last word. Let's move on. Dance Gavin Dance at the Disco have released their new song, Son of Robot. The second single from their upcoming eighth album. Shit, man, this band's put out eight albums. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Artificial Selection. Dude, Tillian and the sparkling Brendan Urie jacket. Dude, it's all deadly, man. It's all deadly.
He's out there slaying, dude.
It's like,
slaying.
What are they, like, magician core now? Like, it's so deadly, dude.
Absolutely.
It's so fucking shimmering and great. I'm going to start. Do you like this better than Midnight Crusade?
No. I do not. This is a really solid Dance Gavin Dance song. I truly stand by it when I say that I don't think this band would put out bad material. But this is not, it's a much more experimental song, I'll say, within the Dance Gavin Dance, the current Dance Gavin Dance Tillian canon. I'm a little disappointed. Feels like it's missing that key melody to keep people coming back, like that key hook that really brings you in, like when he belts out the chorus on the first single. But I love the continuation of the Robot with Human Hair saga, even though, you know, like the Robot with Human Hair died literally two albums ago. And they've still kept it going on with prequels and sequels and stuff like that. So overall, solid Dance Gavin Dance song. Little disappointed. I'm still so excited about this album, and I'm so stoked to see those first week numbers, man. I'm at like a 7.3 out of 10
on
this one.
Okay.
What about you?
You know, they're having fun,
mm-hmm.
and I like that.
Right.
Like, this is a fun song. They're kind of all over the place, but you know, like I just can't with this band anymore. And you know,
I just can't.
Like it's another Dance Gavin Dance song to me. At the end of the day, and I actually really do like, I love Tillian's vocal melodies, like on that chorus. It's great, man.
What?
Like, he's vocally crushing it here. Like, he sounds better than ever, you know. But the band's fucking formula is just so tired, you know. I don't know. Like, this shit was cool in 2008, and it felt tired in 2012. And now I don't even know what to think of it. Like, dude, do we gotta have the same exotic guitar lead in every song. Like, every time we have to have the same sound from the band. It tropical feels, post-hardcore. But I'm just, it's like,
that's
they're
a great
so
way to
niche-y.
Describe it. Yeah, you know? I love it's that. Like, I love that. But,
let's do something it, different,
it,
you know?
No, but it has felt different every Tillian album. Yeah. If you're in the trenches for this band, it has genuinely felt different every album. And, I think you need to dive a little harder into the Tillian era.
Can't, man. No, and what's funny to me though is with all the success they're having, you know, which is great, it kind of feels like they could be ready for like their Portugal the Man moment almost.
Oh my
but they're,
god,
they're just so damn niche-y, you know what I mean? They really like are their own genre that they kind of block themselves from that happening. But I feel like, you know, if BMG, you know, sort of saw something there and maybe, like, can they just drop the screams? And, like, maybe it's time to drop the screams. Like, I feel like Tillian's voice is strong enough to carry this band. Like, let's drop the screams. Let's drop the formula, the same formula every time. And let Tillian carry this band and let's see if they can have their Portugal the Man moment. Like,
don't
I can and
do my man John Mess yeah. like that, man. He don't I'm need to sorry. Be out of a job.
They're good screams and all, but like, it's just, let's try something new. I don't know. You know, that's, this is coming from someone who was sick of this band in 2011, you know? So I am just, you know, I'm just at this point with this band. I just, you know, I'm super glad they're having success. As I've said, it all sounds the same.
Yeah, you jump ship, and they kept doing what they do best, and they've grown to the biggest they've ever been. So we'll see what happens after this record. We might see a bit of a I don't want to say
the record's going to do great. I mean, they're going to continue to do great.
It's going
to
do great off the good graces.
They're a talented band.
Right. It's going to do good.
Their fans love them.
I think it's going to do good off of the good graces from the last record. I'm not worried yet about the longevity of this cycle, but I think if they, you know, if they could keep it rolling for the next 2 years or a year later, they'll probably have another record to put out. You know, you're right. Like, BMG, step in. Let's do an alt radio single.
Let's make a single. That's what I'm saying. Tillian's voice is just so goddamn good. Like, that's all I took away. That's what I mostly took away from this song. And that's just like, let's try some.
For sure. I'm all for it. I'm all for that experimentation. But
they're their own genre. They really are.
Don't be taking away from my boys, man. Don't be dissing on my John Mess over there.
Knife
man.
Down. There's no diss. It's just, you know, fucking eight albums, man. Like the same goddamn shit.
No, man. This is not This is not state champs here. This is not state champs
here. It's not state champs. These are talented musicians that have done the same talented thing like for eight albums.
But they've managed to reinvent themselves every record in a different way. You're just not looking deep enough.
Scream tropical guitar sing. Scream tropical guitar. It's the same shit, man. Okay. Did I get my score? Do I have a score?
Do you have a score on this song?
I'm at 6.5 out of 10. You know, I'm waiting for that 7. Maybe they'll throw a curveball.
Oh my god. This is where we're at the scene. I'm waiting for that 7.
Dark time in the scene, man.
Okay. Oh man.
Did you see Panic at the Disco play on Ellen?
I did. And Brendan. Dude. Coming in hot with the wow performance, man.
Brendan is becoming one of Ellen's favorites. Can you tell? Like, she's stoked every time he comes.
I think Fallon's getting jealous over there, man.
Yeah. Dude, Ellen is, like, all about it, dude.
Let's talk about this, man.
Okay, so they did the new single, Pray for the Wicked, which you and I were pretty lukewarm on when it came out. We were kind of, dismissive of it. But, you know, mine and Tyler's opinion aside, which, you know, sometimes mine and Tyler's opinion doesn't fucking matter. The song's doing really well, you know, at alt radio. It's sitting at number 7. I hear it all the time on alt radio. It's still outside the top 40, but not bad as a single for a launching, sort of like a launching pad for your album campaign. It's doing good. But great performance. Like, the dude is the greatest showman, you know? Dude is a pure entertainer. He's smashing tables on Ellen. He's breaking glasses. It was just great, you know, to see Brendan in full Brendan mode again. It was also cool to see the new bassist, Nicole, jamming out. Mm-hmm. She looks great. Sorry, Dallin.
I loved the way that they mix solo Brendan with the band. You know, yeah. The first half of the performance.
I like seeing Nicole up there. She looks great.
Absolutely. You know, the first half of the performance, we had Brendan at the disco. Second half, we had a full band again. And I love that they're managing to incorporate the balance of the two. Because they did make a big deal about ushering in a new member. I'm glad that they didn't do all of that for the press and then just be like, okay, it's still just Brendan. So the performance made me enjoy the song while I was watching the performance, but then listening to the recording afterward, I'm still back to where I was when it dropped. There was something about watching him just like go for the fucking gold, man, during that performance, where it's like, did I miss it? Did I really miss it on this song? But when I went back and watched it again, the song really fades into the background. You're not focusing on the song when you're watching this.
It's more about Brendan's performance. Absolutely. It would have been if he had been doing this performance to Hallelujah, it would have been like, hell yeah. You know what I mean? Like turn up.
Uh-huh.
But the song, yeah. I don't know though, man. He might like win over some of those, like, you know, the stay-at-home moms, like, oh, watch it.
Dude.
You know what I mean? Like, he's up there in the audience with all the moms. Like, he went into the crowd, and I think Brendan has, like, potential in, like, that Adele sort of way to win over an older audience.
You know, just to say that, man.
Yeah, just the sort of Sinatra thing he's doing, you know?
Oh, man, yeah.
So interested to see, and slightly concerned to see where this new album cycle goes.
Right? It was such a great show, and I wish the music stood up to it. But, like, if there's longevity a couple cycles down the road for Brendan, I just think... It sounds crazy, but, like, there's a potential to pivot towards, like, Grammy bait for him. Like, Adele is Grammy bait. There is a way for Brendan to pivot to be Grammy bait. Like, he's a couple steps away.
Right. He's just got to get the emo hosed off him. Everybody's got to forget about all that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Before we go, let's hit this story real quick, because this story's fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. So the Used filed a restraining order against former guitarist Justin Schakowsky, also a founding guitarist of the band Seosin. So first off, to see TMZ reporting on the Used in 2018, just wow. Like, holy shit. What a weird take me back to 2004 moment. You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck, man.
Did not feel like 2018.
No, and you know, we've known that Justin's been kicked out of the band for some time now. I know the band just announced it officially, but we've known, and we've heard about some pretty bad blood between the band and Justin, but I had no clue it was at this level.
Not at all.
To go through the story, and this is all allegedly, this is all coming from the story, allegedly, Justin, who is, you know, their replacement guitarist, he from Seosin, he threatened retaliation against the band, and he allegedly threatened to kill himself at one of their shows. This is crazy. And this is at the same time the band are also facing a major lawsuit from founding guitarist Quinn, who Justin replaced. You know what I mean? So it's like, what the fuck is going on? And he's suing them for over hundreds of thousands of dollars in royalty payments. And, you know, that was Bert's, like, true best friend back in the day, Quinn. So they're being sued by Quinn. Justin, the replacement for Quinn, is now threatening to hang himself allegedly at their show or something. I don't even know what's going on. One of the texts that Justin allegedly sent the band was, "Those fucks ruined my life and stole my creative work." And to that I say, you mean The Canyon? The worst Used album of all time? Let him keep it, guys.
Oh,
like, if he's serious about it, give that shit back to him. That is a terrible record, Bert. You don't need it. Like, oh my god, if this guy is this upset about the fucking Canyon, give it back.
I wasn't gonna go there, but now that we're here...
like, you know, and I don't want to make any joking matter. This guy might be mentally ill or what, but like The Canyon, like, holy shit, guys, let him keep it.
The Canyon made our episode, our list of the worst albums of 2017. An abysmal outing.
Easily the worst Used album. I mean, below the ground. Like, just terrible. Just easily.
By far. Those songs are barely cohesive. Yeah, this was so bizarre, man. And when I read this story, I haven't
been, you know, like paying attention to the used full on for a long time. So I got this guy confused with Quinn, who was also, you know, like you said, who was also suing him.
You just thought it was
Quinn. I thought it was the same guy.
Dude, it was funny that Justin's even in this band, you know, because Samson, you know, that's one of mine and your favorite bands. And Justin is a big part of Seosin. I mean, his guitar work in Seosin is defining, you know, of their sound, you know, his lead guitar. And this kind of behavior, like, brings into question, what does it say about him and Seosin? Like, can Seosin allow this guy to be in their band anymore, you know, if he's going to make these kind of threats? And I got to point out, Justin has been super quiet about all of this, to the point where it makes me nervous even talking about it. So we can probably expect a huge lawsuit from him coming at the use after this, because the dude has not said a word since came out. It's just crazy because I just always remembered, like, I think I've met him, and I just always remembered him as just the chill dude from Seosin. So, you know, two sides to every story, I guess, but wow, this was a crazy one.
Yeah, I remember I was still at AP when he made the move to the used, and I was like, oh my god, are we about to get this crazy post-hardcore record from the used again?
Like, 2003 coming back hard, baby. You know what I mean? Like,
yup, I was all ready for it, and then we got the Canyon.
Yeah, the worst.
The scene just won't stop, man. The scene just will not stop. Some days I can't get over it.
We're out of time, Tyler, but I just want to end on like a lighter, happier note. Did you see Paramore play Rose Colored Boy on Colbert?
How is this gonna end on a happy note, man?
I like Haley. Okay, Haley's nice. Haley's a nice thought to end the show on. Can we at least let's just end on Haley?
Oh, wow. Question.
Was Haley supposed to be like soaking wet, like water dumped on her in this performance, or was she just supposed to be really oily?
I think it was supposed to resemble sweat, like she was in the middle of an anxiety attack. I'm not gonna go any further.
Well, you know, Rose Colored Boy is not the single that is going to save the failure that was After Laughter, but it is more enjoyable than Justin from the used and Seosin threatening the used. So
absolutely,
I would like to leave you listeners just with the thought, go check out Paramore performing on Colbert. It was okay.
It was okay.
All right. No. That is it for the show this week, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy the show, please go take the time to rate us on Apple Podcasts. Give us those 5 stars and we will love you. If you have any questions for the show, write us at notescene@gmail.com and we will happily answer your question on the show. Till then, see you next week.